Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, and welcome to American Conservative Radio. A little bit of technical difficulties going on. Sorry about that. We've got about 4 minutes worth of quiet time to contemplate what's been going on in the markets for the last couple of days. My apologies to all couple of you listeners. Going back to my starting point, sorry about that. I want to talk to you tonight about both the financial mess that's going on and some topics about the political race. But I am going to encourage you to visit our website, www.AmericanConservativeParty.org. And if you're interested, I'm going to invite some callers tonight to join us. Our number is 646-652-2828. my good friend and co-member of the Executive Committee, Bill Hinman, and I have been having several conversations over the last several days about the root causes of our current mess. If you've been reading the blogs or listening carefully to the snippets granted to the mainstream press by our illustrious government leaders, you might have some idea of what's going on and the arguments that are happening. I want to share with you something I wrote over the weekend. I am a conservative. I believe that the government is a necessary partner in the operation of our country. I also believe it is, or should be, a minor partner. Every day, people and businesses make choices, and those choices have consequences, for better or worse. When those consequences are good, we celebrate and cheer. When those consequences are bad, we suffer and hopefully get back up and try again. You know, I can't be real considered in this post. I'm spitting mad. For the last 18 months, I and a lot of other people have been warning that the financial markets are in deep trouble, and unless something changes, the consequences of years of bad choices, we're going to make a hash of our financial institutions. Well, every time some official told the world everything was okay, as recently as just a couple of months ago, that the few doomsayers were part of the lunatic fringe, fewer and fewer people paid attention. The damage continued to grow every time a little effort was made to put a Band-Aid on a fatal wound. Fatal, you ask? Bear Stearns died and people congratulated the financial system. Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac have been put on life support and people cheered. This past week, Lehman Brothers and Merrill Lynch died, and the markets got a little concerned. AIG needed a heart transplant, and a few people just kind of went, what's going on? And then in a perfectly healthy, strong economy, the federal government promised an entire market that their stupid, bad choices would have no consequences. And in reality, the only thing that happened was every warning about doing the wrong thing was no more than a laugh line in a comedy routine. Too big to fail means that you need to make as many choices as possible to get as big as possible so that no one will make you pay for your mistakes. I have been told this week that we have no choice. The consequences of letting those institutions that made bad choice on top of bad choice is too much for the American taxpayer to bear. So the United States government is going to make the American taxpayer pay. We have no choice. We cannot punish the stupid choices of firms and government because the cost to our economy is too much. The damage would be too great. So, we'll fire some people, trim around the edges of the wound, use a bigger Band-Aid, and as one of the lunatic fringe, I'm sorry to say the patient might be alive, but only because the machines are keeping him that way. Soon enough, January or February, the plug will not be pulled, but the electricity will fail. Enjoy your Christmas. The source of my pessimism is the knowledge that we are only at the beginning of a problem in the housing market. We have further to go, and our government leaders are acting as if the fix that can be applied today will last. It will not. How do I know this? Well, no is a strong word, but consider. The subprime mess was maybe 2 or 3 million mortgages. Of them, about 1 million of them have failed, or in the process of failing. But there's a bigger mess due to start any time now. Back in 2005, a new kind of loan was offered. Here's the particulars. You could pick your payment. They were called option ARMs. You could make a payment equal to a 30-year fixed loan, or you can make a payment that was interest only, or you can make a payment that was less than interest only, and the difference would be just added to your loan, up to an additional 10 to 25%. Once that number is hit or the option period expired, you would have to pay the full payment. And here's why this was a very popular loan with banks. Every month you were short, the bank got to add that to its income, even though you hadn't paid anything. There are more option arms than some prime mortgages, and they start resetting soon. How do you think people are going to feel about paying on a loan that is 10 to 15% more than when they started and the value of their home has gone down? I will concede to Bill that the root cause of our problem was the push to make banks give out more loans to people less able to afford them. One of the reasons some people, and I don't put Bill in this group, want to use this as the primary cause is that it originates in the Clinton administration, or if you really want to go back, the Carter administration. But my argument has been that until securitization was given the green light, there was simply a limit as to how much junk loaning could go on. To the Republicans' credit, they tried to get more supervision on the mortgage markets, but I doubt it was altruistic. They saw the amount of money flowing from Fannie and Freddie to Democratic causes, and they wanted some, or if they couldn't get it, they were going to make sure they could cut the supply. It's been my experience that there are two kinds of politicians. The one that makes their life comfortable and skims a little off the top by taking extra vacations, an extra speaking fee, or a couple of gifts. Then there is the one that thinks political office is a money machine and just keeps taking until someone, everyone, notices. Such was the case with Freddie and Fannie from 2002 to 2005. There might have been some chance to prevent the situation we're in right now if the reform proposed in 2005 had been implemented, but that's water under the bridge. Whatever the root cause, and I'm going to invite Bill to join me in a moment, there is a cure. Let the financial organizations fail. There are lots of reasons not to allow it to happen. Good reasons. But to argue for the bailout is to make the argument we have to do something we hate because the alternative is much worse. I'm not buying it. Changing the law back to what it was will not change the mess that's on the financial balance sheets right now. Yes, we've got to fix the laws. We need to add some oversight and get politics, and that means the government, out of the business of lending money on mortgages. But we have trillions of dollars of trouble, and the problem is not going to get better. Like gangrene, the problem cannot be solved by treating the wound or even pulling out the original infection source. We need to cut off the leg. AIG went from looking for $20 billion to taking $85 billion in just 6 days. We have gone from $700 billion to $1.8 trillion for the bailout in a weekend. And I just read an analyst this evening in Japan that is suggesting that the bailout needs to be about $5 trillion. Here's the problem with my idea. It will do significant damage to the dollar, not just in the value, but in the confidence. For many people, the damage will be permanent. They will never trust us again. However, for the people that actually understand the world and economics, they will be very happy. The only question will be, will we squander what we have paid so dearly for? Here's my positive, never mind. I'm not going to worry about a future I don't see being allowed to happen, even if it should. Bill.
Hi, Tracy.
Care to comment?
Well, sure. I agree with almost everything that you said. I guess the only caveat that I would throw in there is if you don't understand how you got someplace, you're very likely to go there again. So here's my take on all of that. we decided that we wanted to socialize lending. What's the cure for that? Well, from my perspective, don't socialize lending. If people are not qualified, i.e. income, past credit history, adequate collateral, don't make the loan. Now, you're correct. That's water under the bridge. We already did that. So the cure has to be, one, let's recognize what we did wrong and say, no, we're not going to do that again. Two, let's say if we actually believe in free markets, then we believe that that free market can not only succeed, but it can also fail. So if you bet that the real estate bubble was going to continue forever, and you put your money there, and it doesn't continue forever, guess what? You lost your bet. If I go to Reno, Las Vegas, any place that allows gambling, and I put my money down on a roulette number or a color or a particular number in craps, and I lose, I don't get to say, oh, I made a mistake, I want my money back. That doesn't work that way. So let's say, yes, those institutions need to fail. We need to, if we're going to try and cure this problem, I think we need to say, preferred shareholders, I'm sorry, you bet wrong, you're going to lose your money. Equity holders, common shares, I'm sorry, you bet wrong, you're going to lose your money. There was, and I have to tell you, I don't remember the name of the blog, but there is a Dr. Huffman, that's a PhD doctor, not a medical doctor, in economics, who has a plan that at least on first reading makes some sense to me. You might Google him and say, okay, what is that plan? And I don't have the details of it here in front of me, or I would give them to you. But that's kind of my take on it. If you made a bad bet, then you have to live with that. Back to you.
Well, you know, the idea that the financial markets, look, we don't believe that the financial market is going to fail. I'm certain you don't believe that. I believe you believe. I believe. We all believe. Yay. that individual corporations, you know, will fail.
Yes.
And we might have a huge number of them failing. And it might cause extreme duress, you know, to the individual, you know, walking down Main Street. I read the discussion as to what prompted all of this to start last week.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what caused this?
Well, you and I have had that conversation.
No, I'm not talking about the big problem. What spurred this $700 billion bailout on Thursday? Because let me tell you, things have been progressing pretty much the way they have over the last 3 or 4 weeks. What was it that all of a sudden changed, you know, sometime last week, in the middle of last week? What changed?
Well, I can tell you my take on it. I think that Mr. Bernanke and others in the Fed and the Treasury believe that if you allow the mortgage-backed security folks to fail, that will trigger an avalanche, and that will cause more and more institutions to fail down to the local community bank level.
But let's talk about this, okay?
Okay.
You were in this industry.
Yes.
People may not know. Bill, what's your background? Let them know.
Full disclosure, I have 35-plus years as a banker working for both major chain branch banks and independent banks.
Okay.
I was a commercial lender, a real estate lender, and a consumer lender, and a branch manager.
Okay. You and I know that if a bank fails, it doesn't just close its doors, everybody goes home, and everybody's out.
Right.
Okay. You and I know that if a bank fails, for the people that have their money in there, up to $100,000, the name on the check is going to be different. And it
yep.
might take a week or so to get things straightened out, but for the most part, no big difference to them.
Exactly.
And to the people that have loans with those banks, they'll get a letter in the mail in 3 or 4 weeks saying, start sending your payment here instead of there.
Yes.
Okay. So in the big scheme of things, for the vast majority of people, a bank failure, thanks to all the things that have gone on, is pretty much an inconvenience. Now,
yes.
there's a lot of people it hurts, the people that work for the bank, their investors, people that had more than $100,000 in there. Those are all people that, you know, it does hurt, and I'm not trying to minimize them.
Right.
But for exactly the same reason that I tried to argue maybe unsuccessfully over the weekend, that loans have values. Just because we don't know what that value is doesn't mean that it's valueless.
That's true.
And, of course, that's one of the arguments that Bernanke and Paulson are making is those loans out there are not valueless. We're not just throwing money after bad. Many of those loans are worth pretty much what everyone thinks they are worth.
That's true.
But there's going to be a lot of them that are going to be worth less. And then the question is, who decides what less is and who benefits from it?
Yes.
What started last week was, and this is what scares the bejesus out of bankers, probably scares the bejesus out of you. I'm going to read this to you. I'm going to do it fast.
Okay.
Cracks started to show in the money market accounts late Tuesday when shares in one fund, the Reserve Primary Fund, which touted itself as super safe, fell below the golden $1 a share level.
Broke the
It had purchased what it thought were safe Lehman bonds, never dreaming that they could default, which they did 24 hours earlier when the 158-year-old investment bank filed Chapter 11. By Wednesday, banks sensing a run on their accounts started stockpiling cash in anticipation of withdrawals. Banks, which usually kept an average of $2 billion in excess reserves earmarked for withdrawals, pumped up, listen to this, pumped up to an astounding $90 billion by Wednesday, their cash reserves. And for good reason. By the close of business on Wednesday, $144.5 billion had been withdrawn.
Yep.
And how much money had been taken out of the money market funds the prior week? $7 billion. By Thursday, that level, fed by an incredible volume of sell orders pouring in from institutional investors like pension funds and sovereign funds, had grown to $100 billion, and it was still not enough. On Thursday morning, before the markets opened, there were in excess of $500 billion in sell orders waiting for the market to open.
Isn't that incredible?
Paulson and the Treasury and the Fed injected $105 billion before the markets opened. I don't remember hearing anything about that. I don't
Me
know
either.
If you remember it, but I certainly don't remember hearing it.
Never heard a word.
That's the only thing, you know, that was George taking his honeymoon money and getting in front of a tsunami and hoping to God he was going to have a penny left when he walked out of there at 5 o'clock. That's what they did on Thursday. That's what prompted it. And frankly, they should have let it happen.
Yep.
And
I agree.
It would have been nightmarish and terrible, and we would have been dealing with it all weekend long, but it would have been better because, as far as I'm concerned, what they did was just delayed things. They have not solved anything.
You know, and I think that that's absolutely accurate. I mean, I think that we have this choice. There are three models of a recovery. You've got the long L recovery, which is a sharp spike downward, and then a very gradual upturn. You've got a U-shaped recession, depression, whatever, that goes down fairly precipitously, hits a bottom, and then starts back up fairly precipitously. And then you've got a V-shaped recovery that spikes down and then spikes back up again. The problem with the long L and the V-shaped recovery is they are not sustainable. Nobody can do that. The feds can't do it. They don't have enough money. I don't care if they use 2 years of our gross domestic product to do it, leaving nothing else for anything else. They don't have sufficient money to do that.
So you're suggesting to me that you think the number to, if they wanted to actually try and save things, well, let me see, 2 years of GDP, full GDP, that's about $26 trillion for 2 years.
Yeah, something close to that. I don't think that's enough, Tracy.
Well,
not,
you know,
not because we are a worldwide currency.
Well,
I mean, if you talk just about recovery in America, okay, sure. $5 trillion could be right, whoever that Japanese analyst was. But if you talk about a worldwide recovery, which, frankly, folks, that's what has to happen. Now,
you and I have discussed this, and I'm going to bring our listeners up on this.
Okay.
There is a credit derivatives market out there that is just staggering in its size.
Yep.
Now, some people suggest that maybe you could just wipe out both sides of the trades, but that doesn't work, in my opinion. And I don't think the markets think that it would work. But you have $600 trillion worth of, you know, people hedging on left and right, up and down, backward and forward of trades that are already falling well through the floor. You know, that $600 trillion is going to come off somebody's books.
Yep.
And until they decide that they're just going to throw up their hands and actually wipe out both sides, you know, they're going to try and save it. But $600 trillion is not savable. And
no.
That means that there's a lot of institutions. Probably, my opinion, is somewhere north of 4,000 institutions, if you want to take into consideration hedge funds and such, are going to fail. And they're going to do it sooner rather than later because nobody's going to trust them.
I agree.
You know, and I don't understand why the hedge funds – we're going to have a really rather interesting week, I think, over the next 10 days as the quarter starts coming to an end and places try to start making their sheets look better. And it's going to be – I would suggest to us that we're going under 10,000. We might be under 9,000 by the end of the month with people trying to get out of positions just so they can make their – end of quarter sheets look good, because I can't imagine that this is going to last for a long time. And if this bailout doesn't look like it's going to go through by the end of this week, then they'll assume that it's not going to happen. And then we're right back where we were last week.
Maybe. I have a great deal of faith that our politicians are going to spin this a whole lot, and they will make things sound very good. That, oh yes, we will arrive at a bipartisan consensus as to what the cure ought to be, and that will reassure some people.
Some people.
Some
people.
We got
30 seconds. We got 30 seconds left, so we're just. You know what? I think we're just going to have to go to an hour from on now. I think
maybe you're right. We don't have enough time to cover it all, Tracy.
Bill, thank you for joining us again tonight.
Thank you, Tracy.
I, again, invite everybody to check out the website, www.americanconservativeparty.org. see what we're about. Thanks. Join us again next week. We'll talk to you then.
Good night.